And welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
Cinema Vino.
I don't know what that accent was, and I apologize.
That was your O-key coming out.
It's shake and bake, not hailed. So we are drinking Merlot. So we're going to do an entire series this month of Oscar snubs. Great movies that did not receive a single Oscar nomination. Some of these movies didn't receive a nomination of anything of any kind, including Heat. First film that we're going to look at. So that's going to be a great series. You guys need to check that out. And so we're drinking overlooked wines, or wines that maybe have been snubbed for whatever reason.
Wine specific vineyards, or like bottles, or just categories?
Varietals in this case. So Merlot often gets a bad rap. And I think some of that's because of the movie Sideways.
Interesting.
And okay. That film.
I like a Merlot.
Yeah. So people, you know, the character Paul Giamatti plays in that movie bashes Merlot, says he won't drink any fucking Merlot when they're on their wine tour of Napa. And people don't realize, they hear that and think, well, Merlot must be bad. And it's like, they don't realize that, I guess, from what I've been told in the book, he and his now ex-wife, that was their wine that they drank together. And so he also bashes Cabernet Franc. And so his prize wine is a Cheval Blanc that he holds on to. That's a blend of Merlot and Cab Franc. That he, you know, it's like a 1960 Cheval Blanc. It's probably worth thousands of dollars. He drinks it out of a styrofoam cup, and so,
tastes better that way.
Yeah, he doesn't. Seeps in. That's such a great scene too, where he's like at rock bottom and he's drinking like one of the most prized wines in the world out of like a styrofoam fast food cup.
We definitely need to do Sideways.
Yeah, that's a great one. But people hear about Merlot and they think, well, it must suck because he was snubbed it. And it's like, no, he doesn't want to drink it because it reminds him of his ex-wife.
An emotional wine.
It was their wine. You know how some couples have songs? That was their wine they drank together.
Do you have a wine varietal that you will not touch?
No, not really. There's not something I just flat out don't like.
Yeah.
No. And I would say, I mean, because my wife and I do have our own specific stuff, like... I mean, Pinot Noir from us. I mean, it's mainly stuff where we travel together, like Pinot Noir from Oregon, or Cava from Spain. Mm-hmm. But even, you know, just like Châteauneuf du Pape from France. I mean, the stuff we drink when we travel, that's kind of our wine. So, and I get how in that pain of like losing a relationship like that, you wouldn't want to go near that anymore. It's like hearing, you know, music that reminds you. But there's nothing I just flat out don't like. I will say, in white wine, I'm not a huge Chardonnay fan.
Yeah, not a big Chardonnay fan either.
Yeah, and that's mainly...
What's the white wine that's like super, super sweet?
Like Moscato?
Moscato,
yeah.
That's what it is. I won't touch Moscato either.
Yeah, I've got to be in the right mood.
It's like candy.
Yeah.
It's like candy.
I'm not a big sweet tooth when it comes to wine.
Yeah.
I love sweet food, but not sweet wine.
So Merlot, fuller body.
Mm-hmm.
Usually...
Drier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely drier. Leaves your mouth a little chalky.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got good notes.
Yeah. I mean, Merlot tends to be a little bit softer than Cabernet. You'll often see Merlot and Cabernet blended together to help. Merlot will help round out the Cabernet.
Yeah.
Merlot is one of the old school, I mean, like thoroughbred wines that are used to blend Bordeaux.
I've always said Merlot is like a Clydesdale.
Yeah.
I have not always said that.
This is one of the classic grapes of Bordeaux. So it's old school. It's elegant. There's some great Merlots. Like the Margaux wines that you find in France that are primarily Merlot. Those are some of the most expensive wines out there. They age well. Merlot is just a great grape. And you can pair it with so many foods. And so it gets a bad rap for that reason. You know, just because of what somebody said in one movie. And it's not fair.
Well, and a lot of people will just regurgitate things that they hear about wine. So when you watch a movie that's about wine, it's easy to regurgitate a line that, you know, you don't understand the background.
But I don't know if people think it makes them sophisticated, because working in the store, I heard that for years afterwards. Like, no, the people specifically would turn down Merlot.
I don't fuck with Merlot.
Yeah, and it's like there's nothing wrong with Merlot.
It's that silent T at the end. I don't trust it.
The Merlot.
What is it trying to do?
And it's like, you know, the Pinot Noir, which they love in that movie, and I do love a good Pinot Noir, but it's like if you're going to snub something, Pinot Noir is a very fragile, very easy grape to ruin crop-wise. You know, their entire years of Pinot Noir get destroyed because it can't handle the temperature swings.
can't handle the temperature swings.
And it's like
a few good wines.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Yeah.
A few good Merlot.
And same.
And it's like, if you were going to snub something, snub Merlot, snub Pinot Noir. You know, it's because it's like, it's such a fragile grape. You know, so it's like, you're more likely to have a bad Pinot Noir than you are a bad Merlot.
That's the name of our podcast, The Fragile Grapes. No, that's our band.
Oh. call it, what was it, the Jedi Lutherans?
Lutheran Jedis,
Lutheran
yeah.
Jedis, hauling at the Jawas. That's a callback to a few episodes ago, in case y'all were wondering.
What episode was that? Was that doing Book of Boba Fett?
One of the Bobas.
Yeah. One of the Bobas. Yeah. They're all good.
Which that series only gets more disappointing in hindsight, the more I think about it.
It's much like a Pinot Noir.
Yeah, exactly.
Just more disappointing the more you have it.
Exactly. So this one we're drinking Le Col, which is a Washington State Merlot. Le Col translates, apparently, I'm told, as school or the school from French.
Oh.
And so the winery at Le Col in the Columbia Valley used to be a schoolhouse that they converted into a winery. It is a medium priced, their wines tend to be medium priced. This is probably a $25 Merlot. This would be great for a steak. This would be great for like a full meal, a heavy meal.
Yeah. Something with mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, something that's going to like soak up a lot of meat juices.
Yeah. As my son says, mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes. That's adorable.
Yeah. And he does love a good Merlot with that. So
drinking out of his little sippy cup.
Like, get him some fully loaded mashed potatoes and a nice Merlot.
No, I think this would do well with like some burgundy mushrooms or, you know, something that's more of a savory, heavy vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some like roasted carrots.
Yeah. And that's the thing is Merlot has that reputation of like being weak and soft. You know, like a softer cab.
I've always said that. Pussy ass Merlot.
just fucking weak. And it's like, it goes, it will stand up with big meals, heavy meals. You know, that's great.
It's a heavyweight grape.
Yeah. And it's like, if you don't want like something big and tannic like a cab, Merlot's a good choice. You know, it's a good pick. So yeah. We'll do this for this podcast. We'll do some Merlots. We'll pick some other stuff. I kind of want to do some Chardonnays for one of our later ones because it's like, there's some great Chardonnays out there.
And like we already said, we're not big on Chardonnays. And I think a lot of people are ABC people.
Yeah.
Anything but chards.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, they have that stigma because American Chardonnays became so buttery, oaky,
mm-hmm.
But there are Chardonnays out there in the world that are not that way.
You mean like a drier Chardonnay.
Well, yeah. We'll go to French Burgundy, white Burgundy. And that'll be some very nice Chardonnay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm here for it. I'm ready for it.
French Burgundy is 100% Chard. And red, 100% Pinot.
Interesting.
Both very different from what you find in America. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll take a look at those.
So what movie are we doing today?
We're going to talk about The Batman.
Or in French, Le Batman.
Le Batman. And so we saw this on opening night.
We did. We saw it actually the night before opening night.
Yeah.
The Thursday night premieres weird me out.
Oh, yeah. We saw it a day early.
Yeah.
And so the first half of this, we'll talk no spoilers, and then we will switch gears and talk about spoilers. So right now, you're safe if you haven't seen it. We'll share our general thoughts on the movie. I think we have similar opinions, but not quite the same. And so, Sean, you've read my review. I want to hear your thoughts.
So the general consensus from me, I thought it was really good. I was really skeptical. I think everyone was about another Batman remake.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's hard to do Batman without it being compared back to every Batman before it. And I think they avoided a lot of the pitfalls that we saw coming. They didn't try to reinvent the origin story. They didn't try to rehash the origin story. They put him about as far into his Batman career as you could without it being tedious to watch.
Yeah.
So they put him in essentially like year two Batman, like sophomore year Batman.
Yeah.
Right. So he knows the ropes. He knows what he's doing. He's kind of perfected his craft. He has like his suit all bulked up and he's like good. But we don't have to worry about him like learning how to be Batman. Yeah. And I am so thankful for that because this movie was 3 hours long.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how you ate an entire bucket of popcorn, but like, holy shit, this movie is long.
It was delicious.
Does it feel long? In your opinion, does this movie feel like it's 3 hours long?
There were moments where it did, and we'll get to that in a minute. I mean, for the most part, it moved really well.
I thought it was really well paced.
It was well paced. There were some exceptions to that. And a side note, not having gone to theaters a whole lot in the last few years, movie popcorn tastes that much better now. It's like...
Is it that much butterier and saltier?
It's the mental experience of it. It's like I'm in a theater. I'm in public. And I'm eating movie popcorn. It's like it's weird, like to walk into a theater and get that smell. It's like a Pavlovian thing of like.
I will say, as someone who worked a movie theater concession stand, there is nothing better to get at movie theaters than popcorn.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that's guaranteed to be fresh and guaranteed to be of high quality.
Yeah.
Everything else there, don't touch it.
It's hard to fuck up popcorn.
Hot dogs, don't touch a hot dog at a movie theater.
Yeah.
Absolutely don't.
It's a risk that basically you can touch it, but you're taking a risk.
It's like the truck stop tuna sandwich from Futurama. It will create like a new organization or new organisms inside your body.
I'm vengeance, basically.
Yeah. We didn't get a lot of, we got a lot of like, emo Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my go-to is he put the goth back in Gotham. We got a lot of dark and brooding Bruce Wayne. And I think this movie got the perfect balance of Bruce Wayne to Batman for what this movie was. It was like 85% Batman, 15% Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
And I think that's the perfect amount. I think for where his character was and where the story was telling, I wanted to see Batman. I didn't want to see Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to see Detective Batman, basically.
Which was great.
Yeah. I think that's something that's been missing from a lot of the Batman movies that have existed over the last couple decades.
Even the Nolan version.
Yeah. Even the Nolan version was like, it was an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was an action movie that had Batman in it.
Yeah.
This was Batman. The character was comic book Batman. He was a detective. He mm-hmm. was, you know, seeing things that other people weren't seeing, but then he was also, you know, being a bulletproof badass walking through hallways.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
It was a good balance of that for sure. Of like, you know, the iconic thing that you see in the trailer. So I'm feeling I'm giving anything away, but of like, you know, when he catches up to the Penguin and it's like, you see him in slow motion, getting out of like the framed by the burning flames. Wreckage. Yeah. And it's a slow motion tape. It's like, that's a great shot.
Yeah.
And that's a good action shot of Batman, and that's an iconic, I think that'll be one of the iconic images of the movie. But I did love the detective side of that, where he is like Law and Order Batman, like, you know, Sherlock Holmes Batman, like reading the scene and like, you know, figuring out the mystery behind it all. I did enjoy that, you know, or the, you know, how quickly he can solve the Riddler's riddles, you know, faster than a lay person could, because he's just so sharp, on top of it.
Which is... Yeah, classic Batman.
Yeah.
Is, you know, the Riddler is a Batman villain for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's because Batman is really good at solving, not puzzles, but, you know, mysteries.
Yeah.
So I think they did a good job of doing the Riddler as well. You know, I'm not going to get into too many spoilers, but I think the villains in this were really good.
Mm-hmm.
Zoe Kravitz was awesome as Catwoman. Great.
Yeah.
I think she was... tremendous on screen.
Well cast, yeah.
Really well cast, really well directed. The Penguin with Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
Unrecognizable as Colin Farrell.
It was almost like The Penguin Begins. It's like you see him before he is like the true like supervillain.
Yeah. Well, and this isn't a spoiler because this is public knowledge, but they are doing a spinoff about The Penguin.
And they're basically setting him up for that in this movie. Yeah.
So spoilers, he doesn't die in this movie.
Yeah. But you know.
That's not a spoiler because we know that there's going to be a series about him.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad because I want to see more of this character.
Uh-huh.
Because he's really good.
And Colin Farrell did a really good job.
He did. And it didn't seem corny. Nothing against my man Danny DeVito as The Penguin.
Yeah.
But there was no like puns about being cold, or he didn't have like... floppers for hands, and he, you know, wasn't waddling a
literal
around with
a cane. Penguin.
He wasn't a literal penguin.
No.
He was just a dude who had the like mob nickname of The Penguin.
Yeah.
You know? And it was badass. You were kind of scared of this guy.
Yeah.
You know? And that's something you don't really get out of Crank the AC. Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. which is even the Burgess Meredith a little bit, like with the voice. It's like in this, I feel like, yeah, he was more like Sopranos Penguin, you know, the kingpin type guy.
King Penguin.
Yeah. the mobster you don't want to mess with, you know, kind of that.
Or as Benedict Cumberbatch would call him, Pingling.
Pingwings.
Pingwing.
Man, yeah, he should definitely be an Alfred in a future Batman movie for that reason. So the
audience would never deign to be an Alfred.
The audience can get the treat of him talking about
Master Wayne, how are you going to get the Pingling?
We must beware of the Pingwings.
The Pingwing is on the loose.
If you guys haven't YouTubed that, YouTube Benedict Cumberbatch trying to say Penguin.
The supercut of Benedict Cumberbatch narrating Pingwings.
It's funny and it's maddening at the same time. It will hurt your brain to hear it.
Anyway, he was a cowboy nominated for an Oscar.
He is, so. Yes. And may very well win.
That's a different podcast.
That is a different podcast. Side note from our Oscar podcast, which I apologize for the gibberish of that.
I don't.
We had 6 bottles of wine between the 4 of us, in case you're wondering. So I thought we held it pretty well that we are even on this planet still.
All things considered.
Yes.
You got the podcast that you did, and you know, you're welcome.
I have now seen Licorice Pizza. I've seen every Best Picture nominee.
Okay.
Licorice Pizza is a great film. It's a great, great film. It is an odd movie. It is almost without structure.
I'll look forward to when it goes to streaming.
It is on streaming now. You can rent it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, shit. Bad timing.
It meanders a lot. It's 2.5 hours, but that's part of its charm. It moves in all directions. And we're getting off topic just briefly, but it's a great movie. I would give it a 5-star movie.
Wow.
That's
2 of the 10.
And once you get into that groove of what it's supposed to be, it's because Paul Thomas Anderson based it on real people. He based it on his experience growing up. And Cooper Hoffman, who is Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, is the main character. He plays the main character. And he reminds me a lot of the main character in Rushmore. Like this kind of teenager who was all over the map, can do it all, yada yada. It's a great movie. I don't think it'll win. I don't think it's better than Drive My Car, but it's a great movie. So,
okay.
Having seen them all now, I can safely say that. And now that I'm coherent. So it's definitely amongst the best movies, and you should see it.
Wow, I'll look forward to it.
And Alana Haim, who is in the band Haim, is great as well. So even better because it's her debut performance. So
where do you rate the Batman?
I would put it below. It's tough because it's like I would say it is below Dark Knight.
And okay.
If we're ranking amongst all the Batman movies.
Right.
I would say it's below Batman Begins, maybe even with Batman Begins, and maybe even with the Michael Keaton Batman. It may be a multi-way tie for second.
Okay.
It's tough to rank it, but I would say Dark Knight is the best.
I mean, scale of 1 to 10, where would you put the Batman, just independently, as a movie?
7.5.
7.5, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm like an 8, 8.5.
Yeah, you liked it more than I did.
I did. It got tedious at times. I think there were points in the movie that sort of dragged on a little bit longer than they should have.
Yeah.
Which is bound to happen in a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
It, like you said, it did feel like they were cramming 2 movies into one.
Or three.
But I don't fault it for that. I think it was ambitious, but at the same time, it worked.
Yeah.
You know, the story was cohesive, and I think if you try to take any piece out of it, it sort of falls apart on itself.
Yeah.
It felt very much like this director just watched 7 and then they were just like,
yeah,
what if that was Batman?
Yeah.
You know,
which is ironic because the movie we're going to look at, Heat, was the movie that Christopher Nolan based the look of his Dark Knight trilogy on. He built it around Heat.
Interesting.
Especially the Dark Knight. He sat his crew down and they literally had to watch Heat
Threaten me with a good time.
So, but this one was very much like 7, the Riddler and his tactics.
It felt like 7. It felt like
very, very dark,
like Saw,
uh-huh.
But not. You don't get the, you know, the extremes of Saw, but I think you do get it to the level of 7. I was surprised that this movie was PG-13.
Yeah, me too.
I thought this was R until I was talking about it with coworkers, and I was like, oh no, this is PG-13.
I was shocked. It's so grim.
Yeah.
And it's like Seven is a great movie, but it is almost exhausting. It is so dark and so terrible.
I really want to know how much they had to leave on the cutting room floor to get this to PG-13.
Probably quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it might have been some little tweaks of like editing the language or editing, like showing things from a different angle, certain violence or cutting at the right time. Mm-hmm. It may not have been a matter of like how much in terms of time.
But not showing egregious gore and not showing a lot of like dwelling on the violence.
Careful editing may have brought it down.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised. I thought for sure it'd be an R.
This is as close to an R as you can get without going over the top.
Definitely not a kid's movie.
No.
It is definitely not.
No, my coworker was like, oh, can I take my 13-year-old son? And I was like, ugh. I mean, I
maybe.
Guess?
I don't know. That's tough.
How mature is your 13-year-old?
That's the main thing.
Like,
yeah.
Yikes.
I mean, because if you're thinking like, if you go back to like the Joel Schumacher Batmans, those are almost safe for all ages.
Yeah.
There's almost no real violence in those, you know. I think you could show those to a kindergartner and be fine.
Yeah.
The Michael Keaton Batmans, those are probably a little more hard PG.
The Batman. Yeah.
It's like you might be middle school to be safe from those. Those are pretty dark. But, you know, Christopher Nolan is a definite PG-13.
Christopher Nolan's definitely PG-13. But his are definitely like a Christopher Nolan PG-13 where it's like,
yeah,
it's heavy.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's just dark and kind of dense. But this is like, this is some like stark content. Like it's violent. Like yeah. It's
very frightening.
Messes with you. Yeah.
But frightening in the psychological way, even.
Yeah.
Beyond the violence.
Like Seven. Like yeah. You kind of leave it feeling like you take a piece with it when you leave.
Yeah. And it was like, without giving anything away, I summarized this, I think, talking to you guys, where it's like, you know, the ending is, I mean, the movie is very bleak and it ends on a note that's slightly less bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So take with that what you will. You know, it's like I remember like Roger Ebert reviewing the movie 8 Mile with Eminem, and he was saying like over the course of the movie that's such a bleak movie and Eminem is such in such a bad place in that movie, and the best thing you can take away at the ending is that he's in a little bit less of a bad place. You know, and that's kind of, I thought about that watching this, where it's like, you know, this is such a dark, dehumanizing experience. I mean, it really is a mirror image to the Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, where it's like it's such a just grim film. And then at the end of it, it's a little bit less grim. And it's like, you know, for a superhero movie, it's like, I don't know, is that what we look for in our superhero movies? It's like, do you look for triumph or do you look for like, no, yeah, it's not quite so bad.
Well, and in the Batman mythology is always that Gotham is a very dark city.
Yeah.
You know, and it's always going to need the Batman, but at the same time, it's dark because it has the Batman.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a lot of that, of the city, you know, imprinting on him imprinting on the city. You know, you can't really escape that relationship. And a lot of comics and TV shows really try, whenever he has to deal with other heroes, you kind of lose that piece of him that you see his relationship to the city, and you see, you know, what he is as just a standalone character. But yeah, I think this movie did a really good job of talking about his relationship with the city, the darkness within it, the darkness with himself.
Yeah.
And I don't think it dwelled on his mental health. Mm-mm. It was moving a lot. It was focusing a lot more externally than it was internally on Batman. And I appreciated that in the writing.
Yeah. But it reminds me of like when the Christian Bale came out, and it was like the knock on that was these are humorless movies and they project Batman as a very tortured individual.
Yeah.
Those movies seem downright sunny compared to this one.
They do. Yeah.
So it's all perspective. It's like this one is a very dour movie. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's very difficult for me. And I thought about this watching it. It's very difficult for me to imagine this Batman interacting with the Justice League.
Yeah.
I think
the amount of eye makeup alone is just bad news.
A little too evanescent.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think they would send him to a different lunch table. you know, it's like, and I don't know, from my perspective, it was almost a little too dark. It was almost a little too exhausting, you know.
And I think that's what kind of takes away that last, you know, point or two.
And it's like, I in my review, it's like, to me, this was almost like a study of how miserable it is to be Batman. Mm-hmm. How awful that burden must be.
Yeah, I think your review said it really well. Is that it just made you feel like being Batman just fucking sucks.
And, you know, it's the, I remember Jerry Seinfeld had a bit about it of like, you know, you've got the, I think it was about James Bond where it's like, you know, he's talking about James Bond where it's like, you got the supermodels, you got the fucking badass sports car, you got a license to do whatever the fuck you want.
What are you so sad about?
Why not smile every now and then? You know, it's like, I think that about Batman. It's like, you got this, you know, you're a superhero. You got the bulletproof sports car. You got the utility belt and the cape. It's like, why not be in a better mood every now and then?
Jerry Seinfeld is also a Superman fanatic, so he doesn't really have much perspective on being anything other than an all-powerful god.
He's
so.
Definitely Team Kent in that scenario.
Superman has nothing to do with this.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's a point that this director has made, is that this Batman is not going to appear in any larger DC universe films.
Which probably frees him up to like truly make him as dark as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I don't know. I was waiting for a little more fun in it. You know, and I know that movies don't have an obligation to be fun. They don't have an obligation to
you
be...
You wanted to see the Bruce Wayne playboy.
Yes. Which I thought Christian Bale even did well. You know, I thought he was a great Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. You know, of like, you know, well, I own this hotel now. You know, that kind of thing. It's like, he brought that kind of swagger to, you know, those three movies. I thought he, kind of the idiot playboy, he played that part really well.
Yeah, and he did the alter ego well.
And the movies had a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. I even think Michael Keaton did a great job. I think Michael Keaton was great on both sides as Bruce Wayne and Batman. But even those movies had that kind of fun, that kind of humor that is very, very in short supply.
And I think if we do get a sequel of this Batman, I do want to see him grow into the Bruce Wayne role.
Yeah.
And see a little bit more of how that kind of fleshes out, because the way that this movie portrays Bruce Wayne is very much as like a reclusive billionaire.
Yeah.
And you don't see a lot of Bruce Wayne. And yeah. I appreciate that for this movie and the way they told the story. Mm-hmm. But I think you can't tell, you know, another story without addressing that Bruce Wayne eventually has to come out.
Yeah.
You know,
he has to maintain that facade if he wants to be Batman.
Otherwise you know, start to realize that, you know, someone's going to start asking questions.
Yeah. No, I agree. Where would you put Pattinson in the hierarchy of Batmans?
In the hierarchy of Batman? You know, there's always the conversation of Batman actors are either a good Bruce Wayne or a good Batman. And I think he was a great Batman. Among the other good Batman, I think Christian Bale.
Christian Bale,
yeah. Was a good Batman as well. I would put him below Christian Bale because Christian Bale had the balance of Batman, Bruce Wayne.
I hated Christian Bale's voice. I know that wasn't all his choice.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
Unintelligibility is a Nolan staple, but it, you know, it was like, where are the drug gangs? Fire to me. It's like, and then you get him on the screen with Bane, where it's like, you barely adopted it, but do it. Like,
Christopher Nolan just had a weird obsession with voices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Tenet was the same way. I had a very difficult time understanding Tenet. You know, where it's like, I don't know what people are saying. You know, and maybe, you know, maybe I need a hearing aid. But it's like,
I admit my hearing is not what it used to be.
Yeah.
I played drums for too long.
Yeah.
Listen to music too loudly in my car.
Yeah.
But I definitely watch movies with subtitles now when I'm at home.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know what people did when they had VHS.
Which, I mean, I remember.
What did you do for subtitles when you had a VHS?
Growing up, I remember I had a Magnavox TV that had closed captioning. So, I mean, even then, I insisted on closed captioning because I wanted to know exactly what people were saying, because there was a chance that I could hear the dialogue wrong.
Interesting.
And which would skew the whole movie. But
so you were a fucking nerd as a kid.
Always. A movie nerd, gigantic movie nerd. Hmm.
Michael Keaton, I would say, is probably above here. I don't know. I mean, I don't like ranking all the Batman.
Yeah, it's tough. It's like ranking the Bonds after you had so many.
Because they exist in such different universes. Yeah. With such different directors and with such different like time periods.
Yeah.
I think each of these Batman, except for the George Clooney one, fit well with their time periods.
Yeah.
And they were appropriate for when they were.
Yeah. And I would love to see Clooney now as like the Frank Miller, like the older Batman.
Yeah.
With the right script, I think he'd be great.
Yeah. He doesn't have the size for it. The Frank Miller Batman is like bulky. Like he's huge.
Well, get him some egg whites.
Honestly, I think Ben Affleck, for all the, you know, flack he gets, I think he's a good, he'd be a good Batman for that role.
For all the bat flack.
I left it on the table for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was good. The movie sucked. I thought he was a good choice.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved how they showed him as a big physical Batman who could, I mean, the fight scenes in Batman v Superman where he is like whooping up on people were well done.
Well, and it's the big difference because everyone wants to draw comparisons to like Batfleck and this one. And it's like you can't really compare Batman in year two to Batman in year like 30.
Yeah.
You know, like Batman in year 30 has some tech.
Yeah.
He's got like, he knows the easy way to do things where he's not going to get shot a million times. Like
yeah.
He knows how long those bruises take to recover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's the point guard, the veteran point guard that's just like far away shooting threes and not going in for the dunk.
But he also has that, the ethical shortcuts too. Sometimes of, yeah. Like, he's dealt with the frustration that this Batman may not know yet.
Yeah.
And so sometimes he may want to go the fast way to resolve it. Physically or whatever. And so people were like, oh, this Batman kills. It's like, well, he's older and that may be his thing. You know, this may be like the guy who's lost Jason Todd or whoever else. Like this guy maybe has suffered some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so he might not be in the same moral place as the Batman that people are familiar with.
Yeah.
So
you want to break into some spoilers and really get into this bitch?
We absolutely can. So if you have not seen Batman, go to theaters. Your closest possible theater and see it. It's a good movie. I would recommend it.
The Batman.
And so, and we've actually discussed this movie a lot without giving a whole lot away, so we don't really have to do a whole lot of spoiler talk, but...
No, there's just a few things I want to hit on that...
Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, kick it off.
I will say that this might have been my favorite reveal of the Batmobile.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So well done.
They waited until like the middle of the second act.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see it in the background of the Batcave for a long time and you don't really like...
With a tarp over it.
You see like a tarp over it, like it's kind of like half done.
Yeah.
When he breaks that bitch out,
mm-hmm.
It is the most intimidating, like it's in the shadows and it just starts like screaming.
Yeah.
It's so well done. I want to go back and just like watch that scene a million times. I got chills. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
But it was
perfectly timed, perfectly well done.
Oh,
yeah,
it was so well done,
and brought out at the perfect moment where the action scene is like going downhill very quickly, and so it's like now you see it's like that's a great moment to bring the how resourceful Batman is and how he has all this stuff at his command, like the Batmobile.
Well, and it was it seemed like it was absolutely a method of intimidation.
Yeah,
you know, how do you intimidate these guys that are like think they're above the law? How do you intimidate these mafiosos that have just been operating outside that have, you know, these cops in their pocket that are actively working with the cops.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is how you do it. You instill terror into their hearts with like this demonic fucking car
mm-hmm.
that just absolutely just, it snaps the Penguin into like escape mode. He jumps in the car and drives away and
yeah.
immediately, you know, which is the dumbest thing you can do. If you see the Batman get the Batmobile going, the last thing I want to do is be in a car and be chased by him.
Yeah, especially right? What looks like an everyday car.
He was in like a Toyota Prius.
Yeah, like, it's like a Dodge Intrepid.
It's like a fucking Dodge Dart.
Yeah.
And so I think that chase scene went on for too long. I think it was drawn out, but I think the director also wanted to show off his Batmobile.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could have just had that Batmobile reveal, had a very short car chase. I would have been fine with that.
Yeah.
Because that reveal was tremendous.
And I will say I did enjoy the Batman Begins where it's like, oh, I got to get me one of those, you know, the tumbler, which also kind of serves that same purpose of like the almost like a big like attack vehicle.
Yeah.
You know,
it was like a military assault vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. Where it's almost like a hybrid of a sports car and a tank,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so that but it was the same purpose where it's like it's just supposed to be this thing where it's like, what the fuck are you going to do to that thing? Shoot at it? You know, there's no way you're stopping that.
Well, the Batmobile has always been a very impractical thing. I think it was kind of designed at a time that it made sense for Batman to get around and commute.
Yeah.
But ever since then, it's evolved to a point where it's more of like a vehicle of assault.
Yeah.
You know, it's an assault vehicle that he has to have to like...
More and more practical.
Yeah.
I remember because I saw, I'm going to date myself, the original Michael Keaton Batman in the theater. I was elementary school age.
Okay.
But I was a huge Batman fan. This was like third, fourth grade. But I remember seeing the Batmobile in that, which was built on a Corvette chassis, that version of the Batmobile. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I remember hearing people gasp when they saw like that black sports car looking Batmobile, which was bulletproof and armored and could like spin completely around, you know, on a dime.
Yeah.
So I do remember that. That was also a cool reveal, but it was very different, you know.
This Batmobile felt like it was like a old school Dodge Challenger.
Yes, I got that vibe too.
You kind of got a little Challenger vibe.
Yeah, sports car, but more like heavy duty.
It reminded me of like a Hellcat Challenger, like something. It was a muscle car for sure.
It was a Charles Bronson sports car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
great.
It was so cool. It just, the sound of it was amazing. I think that made it worth going to see in theaters.
And like rocket repels and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. Oh, fuck. It was so cool.
Yeah.
And the scene of him chasing the Penguin was just, oh, it went on for too long, but I think it was it. Like I said, if I was that director, I would want to show off my Batmobile.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of like a trademark of Batman, right? Yeah. So if you're going to make a Batman movie, you got to show off your Batmobile.
No matter how dark it is, he has to have cool shit.
And I appreciated that he rode around on his motorcycle most of the time because it's more practical and it's more sleuthy and he can kind of like be incognito, even if he has a fucking cape.
Yeah. He can. It's like the Batpod in the Dark Knight trilogy, where it's like he can maneuver and disappear easier. Mm-hmm. So it fits the character a little more than driving at that point like a car the size of a small house.
It definitely, this movie had more of like a small scale hero, like vigilante vibe.
Yeah.
Than it was like, banana, you know, Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was like he wasn't allowed to operate within the law. Obviously there were some things where he was getting brought into crime scenes and he was being allowed to see things, but it was because he was being specifically called out by the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, like to the Batman, all those,
the letters. Riddler. Yeah.
Sorry. The Riddler. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but you saw a lot of cops be like, why is this fucking guy?
Yeah. Not want to let him through.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you learn later, it's like, they may be on the payroll or whatever. Like they may not want
him. They were on the payroll.
Yeah. What do you think about John Turturro as, Carmine Falcone, the crime boss?
So it's kind of funny because I just watched Rounders, one of the movies we're going to do for in the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. He was in there as Knish.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was good. He wasn't really like a he wasn't a big part of the movie. He was kind of like a ominous guy in the background. Travis obviously would have a lot more thoughts about Falcone,
and we will get those.
Yeah, because spoilers, Falcone is the father of Selina Kyle.
Mm-hmm, which I did not know. I don't know if that's canon.
That is canon.
Okay, yes, that's canon. Okay.
And so that played a big part. But I don't think it added enough to the story. But the big twist was that he was the rat. He was the one who turned in
the Falcon.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's like
bird or rat with wings.
Yes. He reminds me of the Godfather and Abe Vigoda. Abe Vigoda was one of the Godfather's like top like underlings or whatever in the movie. And, you know, he betrays the Godfather in that film. I'll say spoilers, but 51 years, so.
It's a classic if you've seen the Godfather.
It's AFI's number two or three movie of all time. So
what's number one?
I believe Citizen Kane is number one.
Oh,
cool. I think.
Yeah, okay.
I think Godfather might be number two on that list.
Yeah.
But so Abe Vigoda in The Godfather was Tessio, who is one of, ends up being a traitor in the film, but it's like a tall, kind of lean gangster.
It's the tinted sunglasses that really make you not trust him.
Yeah.
You know.
He looks, if you go back and look at Abe Vigoda and his performance at that moment, it's like he's kind of going for like a Tessio, like an Abe Vigoda vibe.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much that old school, like Italian mobster, you know, can't really like see his eyes all the time.
So I thought that was good. That was an interesting choice. It was more like accurate to
The casting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least to movie mythology for gangsters like that. It's like that was more accurate for more so than was it Tom Wilkinson in Batman Begins, where it's like, you know, I think he was the same part in that film. I believe he was Falcone.
Yeah, he might have been.
Yeah. Even though I think they called him Falcone, but either way.
Hey, Falcone.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what else in terms of spoilers. I enjoyed the action scenes. I enjoyed the music. I love Michael Giacchino's music.
Yeah, Michael Giacchino's had a lot of really good scores. So yeah. this was definitely one of them. Had some like great rock tracks, like some kind of emo-ish, not emo, but like 90s alternative, some dark.
Something in the Way by Nirvana was used twice, yes. Beginning and the end. And that, yeah. And I was like, man, what a great, it fits the vibe so well.
Well, and we talked about this, the theme of Ave Maria, mm-hmm. kind of ran throughout this. This was kind of the Riddler's theme. So in the very beginning, Ave Maria is playing, talks about his, you know, childhood as an orphan, Ave Maria in the church. And then like, in the scene where he's interrogating him in Arkham, mm-hmm. he starts singing Ave Maria, and the score starts playing Ave Maria in minor, and it's so fucking good. It's very, very well done.
I love the choice, and I don't know if it reflects on the soundtrack, but in the movie, he doesn't resolve it. He never lets it resolve for the rest of the movie, so he literally ends every time it plays on a question mark. Mm-hmm. It's like he never plays it all the way through, so it's literally like, it's a sentence without like a definite period.
Yeah.
So I thought that was such a clever choice of like, he never quite, it's like I was waiting for that note to resolve it and it never comes. So it's like, it's literally like a musical statement with a question mark. So it fits the character so well.
What did you think of the casting of Paul Dano?
It was weird, but it's like weird. I think weird works in Batman though. It's like the Heath Ledger thing. It's like you almost want to go against what people expect.
Yeah.
You know, I think the weird casting, like Michael Keaton as Batman, Heath Ledger as the Joker, it's like the weird casting choices, Tom Hardy as Bane. It's what you don't expect. Those casting choices tend to work the best.
Well, and it was a bit of a commentary on like, the disenfranchised youth, like the nerdy white male that has become, you know, part of the, I don't know, you know, part of the violent youth or yeah. violent, you know, middle-aged men now that are like nerdy incels.
Exactly.
I thought it was very much touching on that theme.
Yes. Not having known a whole lot about the incel culture or like the gamer, whatever, like, because I know that there's been violence in that area
yeah.
of society, not knowing much about, I definitely thought about that watching him.
Well, and like he had like a network online that was encouraging him to be more violent and encouraging yes. him to be increasingly radicalized.
Yes.
And I think that's something that's been going on for years now.
And I thought about that. It was like that certain things have been done where like people have been spurred on by the community around them. They are loners who are united by the fact that they're loners. It's almost like a paradox.
Okay, so the ending scene, like the big climactic fight scene, how did all those fucking nerds get in the same spot? How did they sneak in with like rifles and ammo and masks?
Yeah.
Like that seemed sketch. I don't understand that.
Yeah. I mean, well, to me, even Nolan's movies got that way where it's like, how did that guy get the freaking cell phone buried under his skin for the big reveal of like the Joker's like, I just want my phone call. You know, it's like, how did all of this work out at this exact moment for this exact time for him to get that phone call that blows everything up? You know, it's like,
yeah,
there's a lot of shit that had to like fall at exactly the same time.
Just in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will. So one question I had that I meant to ask Travis. So at the end where he's incapacitated and he has to basically, revive himself, he injects himself with like a green fluid.
Yeah.
Was that venom?
It kind of seemed like something like that.
Like Bane's venom. Like it was canonically like a green, amphetamine.
Some sort of alchemy that he'd cooked up to like give him like the, you know, WWE juice that he needed to go berserker.
Yeah, because he went fucking berserker on that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he almost killed that guy just by punching him in the face.
Yeah. That might have been his Alamo, his last resort.
Yeah.
You know, if he was truly, like, cornered.
What did you think of the casting of Commissioner Gordon?
I liked it. I thought that he was a good choice. He fit this movie very well.
He did.
Jeffrey Wright is very good at playing cynical and down and out. And so...
And he plays... He always plays kind of the same character.
Yeah.
He's an HBO cornerstone for a lot of things. Yeah. He's been in... Oh, gosh.
Westworld.
He was in Boardwalk Empire. Yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff. I love him.
Such a great actor.
He's a great actor.
So he kind of brings that cynicism that this is, to me, this is by far the most cynical Batman I've seen yet.
Well, and it's probably the most corrupt police that he has to deal with, because this is prior to Commissioner Gordon taking on the corruption in Gotham.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, presumably, if we get another one, it'll be the cops have been cleaned up a little bit less dirty.
Yeah, it'll head the way that Nolan's did, where it's like eventually it's all cleaned up. It's too clean.
Yeah.
And then somebody comes in to take advantage of how clean it is.
Yep.
You know, Bane. Or, you know, it's like, victory has defeated you. Victory has defeated you. You really adopted the dark. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed it. There were things about it I did not enjoy, but...
What did you not enjoy? I mean, what were the demerits?
I mean, like we were talking about earlier, it's 3 hours. It's 175 minutes.
Hefty.
Yeah. And there are, for a movie to be that long, it is very humorless. It is very dark. It is very dour for that long.
It's definitely not a lot of humor in this movie.
No. So it is... exhausting in that way. It's like we're talking about Seven, where it's like for a movie to be that dark for that long, it's a lot to take in, especially for a superhero movie, especially for a movie that not only that, but has a lot of Batman movies before that to compare it to, where you can remember like not only scenes that were iconic, but funny, you know, or movies of even Heath Ledger had some humorous moments in his movies.
Oh, Heath Ledger had a great comedic timing. I think that was, he played such a good Joker because of the comedic timing. He was a little clowny.
Yeah.
Like when he's, you know, jamming the detonator and it keeps not going off and then it blows up behind him. Which I think was unscripted.
It was improv. Yeah.
I think that was improv.
Yeah. So it's like, I think about that and those movies, it's like, you know, when you have it to compare it to movies that, I mean, cause those movies were dark, but they still, you think about the funnier moments when you think about them.
Yeah.
You know, you think about the comedic timing that those actors had. And some of that was missing here.
Not a lot of comedy.
Mm-mm.
But you do get fully hashed characters.
Yes.
The 3 hours gives you enough time to see, you know, Catwoman's story arc. And you get to see resolution on Catwoman's story arc. You don't...
I agree.
It doesn't get left... Like, it's not a half story.
No.
You know, we get to see all of her and we get to see her from beginning to end. And
yeah.
I think that's something to really be happy with.
Yeah.
Because I think a lesser movie would leave that as just like a half-baked story.
And bring it up later for a different movie.
Yeah, just like leave it unresolved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it reminds me of like the YouTube channel, The Honest Trailers, when they break down Infinity War, where they were like talking about, it's like, this is a lot of movie. It's like, there is so much movie in this movie.
Yeah.
The Batman is that way. It's like, I feel like there is a lot of movie crammed into this movie. And all of it is dark.
Yeah.
All of it is serious. All of it is deeply emotional.
You know. Sometimes you need a little bit more Bruce Wayne to balance the Batman.
A little more levity, yeah. I mean, even I loved how in the Nolan movies they had the interplay between Alfred and Bruce Wayne, Christian Bale, and Michael Caine.
Yeah, and these interplays we got were Alfred getting blown up by a fucking mail bomb.
It was, again, very grim.
Like, the scene that we got the most Bruce Wayne of was at a funeral.
Yeah.
A fucking funeral. Mm-hmm. So, I agree. It was definitely very dark. You know.
And even then, it's like the funeral gets punctuated by him being called away and becoming Batman and coming back.
Yes.
So.
Which he only walks up. Like, I feel like he should have had spurs on.
Yes.
The way he walks into a room. It's always very slow.
There were more than once. And I thought, this is like a Clint Eastwood, like a spaghetti western.
Yeah.
He's like walking on spurs.
Woo.
Yeah. So he's almost like the man with no name.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that picked up on that, because I feel like he should have been wearing spurs.
Yes, and it sounded like he was in the Foley.
Well, I will say, I like the way they didn't give him like a utility belt with a ton of stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. He had like a full on like leg holster with a gun. He had like a ton of, you know, like darts on his wrist. Like they made it very realistic for him to have the amount of gadgets that he did, without giving him, you know, a utility belt.
Yeah. It felt very real world.
It did. It felt like I could be this Batman with the right, you know, resources.
And I could see that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Swear to me. Why were the other drugs going? That's like, man, I don't know how you could get that voice that low for that long.
I appreciate that they did not make him do a stupid voice.
No.
They kept him like the Robert Pattinson voice.
Yeah.
Except not British.
A little bit darker, a little bit changed, but not much.
Yeah.
Which even Michael Keaton was that way. Michael Keaton just changed a little bit.
But the thing is, no one knew who Bruce Wayne was, really, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, I'm curious to see where they go with it. I liked it. I want to see some more of it. Yeah. So.
I would give it an 8, 8.5. You know, definitely some things I can take points off for.
Yeah.
That I can put, you know, an actual finger on, but I really enjoyed it. I would see it again.
Yeah.
I'll watch it when it's on HBO again.
I will too. And I will definitely see the sequel. I think they've definitely earned the right to see a sequel for me opening weekend.
What do you think the sequel's going to be called? If the first one's just The Batman.
Interesting. I mean, would you call it The Batman 2?
The Batmans. Le Batman. He goes to France.
They had a great idea with the first one of just going to a different, like the Dark Knight. I mean, do you do like the Cape Crusader for this one? I mean, like the world's greatest detective. You'd go to one of his other synonyms. Pseudonyms.
I'll have to think on that.
Yeah.
He's got a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Cape Crusader would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like it too. I mean, it's like to, and then you could explore more of his like superhero mythology, like how he kind of broadens out from being a more of a street level, like emo guy to more of an all powerful superhero.
Yeah. And we were workshopping some emo band, Batman names. My personal favorite was Fall Out Boy Wonder.
Yeah. Taking Bat Sunday.
Taking Bat Sunday.
Yeah. and I like
Fountains of Wayne.
Yeah. Fountains of Wayne. Was it Fountains of Wayne Enterprises?
Yeah.
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 That works really well.
Does work well. You know, Fountains of Wayne isn't really an emo band, but you know.
I don't remember what were they.
They were kind of alternative.
Alt grunge.
Alt rock.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'd have to hear them. I'll have to go back to Spotify.
Yeah. Alexa.
But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino, and we had a lot to say about the Batman. But let us know what you think about the Batman in the comments. And be sure and check out our Oscar Snub series coming up soon. But in the meantime, that's Sean Jordan. I'm Todd Wofford. And Todd Wofford. I don't feel like I said that very clearly.
Do you know your own name?
I felt like I kind of slurred my way through that. That's the Merlot talking.
Todd Wofford.
I'm not going to drink any fucking Merlot.
He is Todd Wofford. I am Sean Jordan.
And we will see you guys
next time.
Very, very soon. Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Our website is at cinemavino.net, and reviews of these movies can be found at toddwoffordmovies.com.